Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
The True Crime Society podcast contains adult themes and violence and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. And if you'd like to skip the intro or move to any specific part of the podcast, please refer to the timestamps listed in the episode description. Thank you. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the True Crime Society podcast with Stephanie and Olivia. I don't know why the last two times we did this, I just totally feel like I black out saying that. And then I panic in my head all in those 5 seconds of being like, wait, I don't know what I'm saying. Because I do it so often after we've done this for going on 5 years, which is crazy. It's just like autopilot comes out and then my brain is behind my mouth. But anyways, hopefully that sounded okay.
It's like, I don't know if you ever feel the same when you drive. Like, sometimes I'm driving, I'm like, I don't ever remember going past.
Yeah. X,
and I'm like, I know I did because I'm now in this other place. But it's just like when you go on autopilot, you just don't, you know, can't, yeah, not black out because like, you are aware. But yeah, you're just, I get what you're saying.
You're just totally zoned out, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. So it is April 2nd here, 2025 right now. We survived April Fool's Day. I actually didn't even see like one April Fool's joke or anything.
I actually saw a lot. And like some of them
really?
Were. Really? Like, yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's just, I don't know. Like there's a.
It's usually like the internet stupid posts, products, pranks from companies that will get me at first because I like forget it's April Fool's Day. But maybe I just wasn't online that much.
One I saw that I actually thought was cute and funny is there's near where I live, it's called the Reptile Park. I've probably spoken about it before, but they have like a lot of Australian animals and snakes and spiders. And they actually have like this whole alligator creek, which is random because alligators aren't even a thing in Australia. It's crocodiles. But anyway, so their April Fool's was that you can now camp with the alligators. And they had it set up like a glamping tent, like a real luxurious tent with the alligators right out the front. And like they even had prices and stuff. I'm like, that is very clever.
That's so funny. I love that because like you can do that with African safari type situations.
And like most of the time when you do it, they're still behind the fence sort of, but like in this one they made it look like you could actually sleep right on the bank with the alligators.
Yeah, you have to be crazy to actually do that.
It's this is not funny, and it's like wasn't an April Fool's, but also yesterday Val Kilmer passed away, and so I was reading about it on the New York Times, and I sent it to a friend, and when they clicked the link was gone, and like surely they didn't get pranked, wasn't April Fool's, but anyway, I think what happened is they just ended up changing the URL, but I'm like, oh my gosh, did they really? And even I took a screenshot, and then the article was gone, so I'm like, what is going on? But anyway, it did come back, and he is sadly deceased, but I was like, surely that can't be a April Fool's.
Yeah, April 1st has to be a tough day to die as like a celebrity. Yeah. Everyone's like, that's not true.
I was thinking that, like, out of all the days, it's no one ever believes it anyway. Like, they're like, I won't believe it until TMZ say it or to whatever. But then that one, especially April Fool's, was tough.
Yeah. So one thing to jump subjects because I can't segue right now. A lot of people, because I talked about being pregnant in the last episode, April Fool's. No, just kidding. a lot of people asked how I ended up telling Olivia, and I didn't even talk about it because it was very uneventful. I was a bad friend. I didn't do anything cute, but it was going on and on and on. I kept wanting to like tell her in a more fun way, but then I just felt so crappy and shitty that I felt like I was really slacking off with Instagram and podcast stuff and just general enthusiasm for life that I started feeling really guilty and like having anxiety. I was like, oh my God, Olivia probably hates me. She's probably so mad at me. Like, she's probably like, wow, Stephanie sucks. So one day I just messaged her like on Instagram. No, on Facebook, I mean, which is what we talk on normally. And I sent her a picture of the ultrasound. I was like, by the way, I'm pregnant. And that was how I told her. So
I don't know if I ever really, like, usually, well, obviously, because I can't see you. So I like in person. So when I see someone in person, I usually have an inkling if things change or whatever. But I don't really think I had any idea. Like, we've never really spoken about if you wanted to have kids or not. And like, it's not something that I would ever ask someone unless they volunteer the information, because you don't want to. You know, you don't know what's going on behind someone's personal life. So, you know.
Yeah, you don't know if someone's like trying and can't or what's going on.
Whatever the issue is. So I just never asked. I was like, you know, whatever happens.
That's funny because probably didn't even think about it. And inside I was like, oh my God, Olivia's probably so mad at me. She must hate me so much. She probably every day is like, oh, Stephanie sucks.
And I feel like because we are on different time zones as well, like, you know. Maybe if we were on the same time zone, I would have noticed more. But no, I didn't.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm always tired, and I always say I'm tired and feeling crappy because my job sucks the life out of me and because I record after work, so I'm just tired in general.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was how I told her in a panic, in a frenzy. It's also my, my social anxiety because I'm one of those people where if I do one thing, I'll think about it forever and be like, oh my God, this person hates me. I definitely pissed them off just by breathing. Or like I coughed and like now they're just like so mad about it. Or I made a joke that like didn't land and I'll think about it for 3 years.
No, I definitely didn't think any of that.
Yeah, so that was how it went down for anyone who was wondering.
So like sometimes when I don't have much going on, I like just try and think of funny or it's not even really interesting, but just like, you know, little random chat topics, things that you'd chat with your friends about or whatever. And so I was doing some chores the other day and I thought, I wonder if there's any chores that people actually like doing. Like, so for me, the one thing I love, well, I don't love it, but I enjoy it more than other chores.
You just don't hate it.
Is I love hanging the washing on the line. Like I love it. So I do it so it's all neat. Like on the line outside. So like the towels hang nicely and it just all looks neat and tidy. That's like, that's about the only thing I enjoy doing. I hate putting the washing away. I hate, that's really, and the only other thing I do occasionally like doing is vacuuming when you can actually see like the lines in the carpet.
Yeah.
I'm like, I like that. That makes it look neat. It looks fresh, but that's about it. Do you have any that you like or you hate or?
I could probably like think better, but one that I don't mind. I hate everything, just to be upfront. I'm tired. And actually I called out one day last week, so I had kind of a 3-day weekend, and it really got me thinking how a lot of domestic type chores and like the cooking, cleaning, all that, I don't actually hate doing it. It's just that I'm so friggin' tired from everything else that then it really, really feels like a chore. But I do like tidying and having your house be clean and all that. But one that I don't hate is I don't hate folding laundry, but I hate putting it away. I even hate moving it from the washer to the dryer. I hate every other aspect. But folding it is kind of satisfying for me because I worked in retail for a long time where you had to like fold everything a certain way. So I take some pride in how I fold things and how things are folded. So I like that. But then I just have them all in little piles like on my bed or the floor. And I'm like, now I have to put them away in my closet that has no space, in my dresser that also has no space, and I have to cram them all in somewhere.
One life hack I've made for myself since having kids is what I do is I try and hang as much washing and clothing as I can. Like I hang pants, I hang jeans and everything. And what I do is if I'm hanging it on the line, like I do have a dryer, so I do use that sometimes, but if I am hanging it out, I hang it on the coat hangers on the line to dry. So literally it takes out a whole entire step. So you just take it off the line and you put it away. So
that's a good idea.
I feel like it actually saves quite a lot of time. So we don't really fold like shirts or anything. Our wardrobes are set up so that most of it is hanging, and I've done that on purpose, so it's easier for me.
Yeah, I would love that if I had the closet space, but I live in an old house that has small closets, unfortunately. I also just need to do like a massive purge of, honestly, everything. Everything. I just want to start over at this point, because then you start keeping like everything and you're like, even though I don't wear this, like I had a lot of fun times in the shirt and the memories.
I am really, really bad at is the dishwasher. Like, and people will probably come at me for this, too. But I don't rinse. I just put it all in the dishwasher because I'm like, that's what a dishwasher is for, to wash the dishes. And it does mean like I have to clean the filter and stuff probably more. But like my dad, it's so funny. If we ever go over to the house for dinner, we will load the dishwasher. And then 5 minutes later, I'll see him out there reloading it to the right way that he wants it. You know, like some people like it exactly stacked neatly, whereas I am not like that. I just chuck it in. I'm like, as long as the surface that is dirty can be reached by the water, it's fine.
Yeah, no, and they say that too, like in dishwasher info things that like
you're meant to
waste more water by rinsing stuff because you're running the sink to rinse it off, and then you're running the dishwasher when the dishwasher is technically made to be able to get, like, obviously you're going to wipe your plate off into the trash. Like, you're not putting chunks.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not saying like I'm putting half-eaten meals in there, but like
if it has sauce on it or something, like you're meant to put it in the dishwasher technically. Yeah. You just have to wash the filter.
Yeah.
So sometimes I rinse when it depends on mood I'm in. Sometimes I rinse. Sometimes I'm like, fuck this. You're all going right in the dishwasher. So, yeah. That's our random chat for the day.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
All right, so let's get into the topics. Today, we have, I guess, a bit of a theme episode as usual. We're going to be doing doctors who kill, anesthesiologists who kill. It's always the anesthesiologists, which I know it isn't. These are just names of episodes, theme names of episodes we've done in the past. Like, it's always the husband, moms who kill, moms who murder, dads who kill, all those things. So we're going to talk about two different anesthesiologists today. Who have killed, allegedly.
Yeah. This episode did kind of go in a different way than I thought it would. Like, I started doing it more so as it's always the husband, because the first case is about a husband, but then there's some aspects to the crime that then tie it into the second one. So it's, definitely more a doctor crime episode, this one.
Yeah. So this case, the first one we're going to talk about, you guys have probably definitely heard about. It's been in the news.
Very recent. We've
definitely been posting about it. It happened very recently. And that's the case of anesthesiologist Gerhard Koenig, who is 46 years old. And he's been arrested after he allegedly tried to kill his wife, Ariel, who is 36, while hiking in Oahu, Hawaii. And he apparently tried to push her off a trail near a cliff and beat her with rocks.
Tonight, a dreamy, picture-perfect landscape in Hawaii, the backdrop to a nightmare, after police say a doctor violently attacked his own wife, pushing her off a cliff. Honolulu police say Gerhard Koenig was hiking the Pali Trail in Oahu with his wife, Arielle Koenig, when he struck her in the head with a rock and tried to push her off the ledge. Police say the attack happened around 10 a.m. on Monday when the couple was visiting the tourist site located just outside Honolulu. She was taken to a local hospital with multiple injuries to the head and face, where police say she remains in critical condition. Soon after, police released this smiling photo of Koenig, an anesthesiologist in Maui, alerting hikers of a suspect on the run.
I did see a helicopter fly along the mountains over behind here. It was flying pretty close to the mountains.
After a day-long manhunt, Hawaii police confirmed they arrested Koenig after chasing him on foot. Maui Health released a statement saying after being made aware of the allegations against Dr. Koenig, he was suspended from the medical staff pending investigation. The hospital adding they take concerns and the safety of its patients very seriously and will cooperate with authorities as appropriate. Tonight, he's being held behind bars and criminal charges are pending.
So this is one where info is, like, still coming out to, like, this day, the past couple of days. So we'll just go through it chronologically as things have come out. So we'll start some background into the couple. Gerhard and Arielle, they got married in 2018. There's some very nice pictures of their wedding, which has been really making the media rounds, of them under a nice flower arch.
Yeah, a very attractive couple. Like, yeah.
Yeah, nice, nice photos, nice looking couple. seemingly having the perfect life, as they always do. They originally lived together in Pennsylvania, but moved to Maui in the years following their marriage. There's photos of Ariel online with a young child, so it's believed they have at least one child together, but not really confirmed. Gerhard had been married before. When he was 20 years old, he married a woman named Jessica Patea, who works in the sex industry. They were married for 15 years and had two children together. One of their children transitioned from female to male and goes by the name Kieran. And Kieran has published some information about his childhood online. This is a quote. It says, "You don't remember much of your childhood except for that one Christmas morning your brother came into your room and you hid under the covers for an hour, waiting for your parents to stop fighting. They got a divorce the next year." So it seems like there might have been some turmoil while the kids were growing up and in their marriage. Kieran also wrote about being admitted to psychiatric hospitals and seeing his mother losing blood like trees lose leaves in the fall as she went through two miscarriages. Kieran also wrote about Ariel, but in a positive light. Kieran wrote, "You'll meet your new stepmom. She calls you by the name you want to be called by. You'll start talking to your dad. He's not screaming at you. He's calm." So I would guess that Kieran seemed to like Ariel, at least at the time of writing that. Jessica, his first wife, has also spoken about their relationship. She said, "I met my first husband at 17 and fell in love so hard that for the first couple of years of our relationship, I had to remind myself to breathe when he walked into the room. We married when we were 20, had two kids before age 30, and stayed together until we were 36. It was an intense and all-consuming relationship, first love energy that lasted nearly two decades." So aka toxic relationship. Yeah. So in terms of his professional life, Gerhard worked previously as an assistant professor of anesthesiology and bioengineering at the University of Pittsburgh Schools of Medicine and Engineering. He then took a partner role at the Anesthesia Medical Group in Maui. Ariel is very successful in her professional life as well. She earned a bachelor's degree in nuclear engineering from Penn State University and an MBA from the University of Pittsburgh. At the time of the attack, she was employed as a nuclear engineer. This is according to her LinkedIn and says, "My background is in nuclear engineering, project management, and product management. I've experienced managing software and nuclear engineers of all levels, as well as project managers in a highly regulated, quality essential environment. I completed my MBA in 2021 and enjoy working on projects that require technical and business problem solving. I'm excited to be part of the Natrium team, working to make the Advanced Reactor Demonstration Program a success in helping future Natrium reactors achieve competitive fuel economics." So it seemed like she was very smart, very scientific. I don't even know the right words to describe. Yeah. But
like, I have seen some media articles call her a genius, which is probably true. But yeah, a very, very, very accomplished, very intelligent woman.
Yeah. So in March of this year, Gerhard and Ariel, they traveled from where they live to Oahu for a bit of a birthday trip for Ariel. And on Monday, March 24th, 2025, the couple went to a Pali Lookout in Oahu, which there's a picture over here. Very beautiful, very green, a lot of foliage, but lots of, I would say, I guess mountainous, cliffy, but not like rock mountains, green mountains.
Yeah, I have seen, like, there's lots of videos of it online, and a lot of our group members have kind of posted their videos of the lookout. Yeah, it's like, it, I think it is quite steep and, like, I guess treacherous in some parts. But yeah, it definitely.
There's definitely a lot of drops.
Yeah.
Cliffs, I guess you would say. So at 10:30 a.m., police responded to a call of a man beating a woman on a hiking trail in the area. Ariel told police that Gerhard tried to shove her off the trail and had hit her with a rock. Ariel also said that Gerhard assaulted her with closed fists, and it's alleged that he produced two syringes filled with an unknown substance and poked Ariel with them. She told police that Gerhard turned on her after she refused to take a photo with him.
Maybe just add in some bit there, just say after the attack, there were court documents released, and we got more information about that, what actually happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So according to the court documents that came out since, Ariel said that Gerhard asked her to take a selfie with him. She said she didn't feel comfortable being that close to the edge. so she declined and began walking back. Gerhardt allegedly yelled at her to come back, and when she refused, he pushed her into the bushes. Ariel said he hit her in the head with a rock about 10 times while grabbing the back of her head and smashing her face into the ground. She said she then saw her husband remove two syringes from his bag and attempt to use them on her, but she was able to get them away from him. A witness named Amanda said she heard a woman yelling, "Help, help me." Amanda said she ran to the top of the trail where she saw Ariel lying on her back with a man on top of her, hitting her on the head. The witness said the man stopped the attack when he saw her, and another witness called 911. Ariel said, "He's trying to kill me. He's hitting me in the head with a rock." So from there, Gerhardt fled the scene before police arrived, and after a brief foot pursuit, he was found that night at 6:10 p.m. and was apprehended and charged with second-degree attempted murder.
One of our group members posted that they were actually, I hope I have this story 100% right, but basically they were on a tour bus and they pulled up at the lookout when this was all happening. She said that she saw Ariel, like, was all bandaged, obviously, by that point. Paramedics had arrived, so she said that she kind of saw the aftermath of all this. Because there was don't get me wrong, it sounds like a horrendous attack, but I feel like Ariel was most likely conscious the whole time, or for most of the time. Like, there it was never a, like, she was in a critical condition, but she was never basically had to be resuscitated or anything like that. She was still relatively able to speak and was being treated by paramedics at the scene before she was taken to the hospital.
I mean, it seems like a pretty popular area where, like, people were around and able to get to her quickly. Like, granted, they were alone where they were, but she just yelled and a couple people came to help her right away. Thank God. Yeah.
It blows my mind that someone who's clearly very highly educated, as in Gerhardt, would carry out this ridiculously dumb crime in public. And
I think it seems like, I mean, we'll get into this as we go on too, it seems like he has a rage problem, and some people who have that issue, like, literally can't control themselves when they get into this rage. Not that that's an excuse, obviously, because it's you need to get a handle of your emotions, you need to learn to deal with that, go to therapy and grow up. But some people who haven't gone to therapy and figured out how to cope with their anger issues, like, they get this blackout rage, and I feel like that's almost what happened with him.
Sounds like it.
So after Gerhardt was arrested, his employer, Maui Health, made a statement. It says, "Maui Health is committed to patient safety and upholding the highest standards of care. We've been made aware of the allegations against Gerhardt Koenig, MD. Dr. Koenig is employed by an independent entity contracted to provide medical services at various medical facilities on Maui, including Maui Memorial Medical Center. Dr. Koenig's medical staff privileges at Maui Memorial Medical Center have been suspended pending investigation. Maui Health takes these concerns and the safety of its patients very seriously and will cooperate with authorities as appropriate." So they're like, no way. Absolutely not. Get out of here. So Gerhardt's colleagues at Maui Memorial Medical Center, which is the island's main hospital, told KITV that they were very surprised by the reports that the friendly and quiet doctor allegedly tried to kill his wife. People who knew Ariel and Gerhardt when they lived in Pittsburgh also expressed shock. Ben Brown, isn't Ben Brown the name of another doctor who?
I don't know, maybe.
Like the plastic surgeon?
It was definitely Ben. Maybe it was. Yeah, I'm just Googling up. Yeah, it was Ben Brown.
Well, when I was reading the notes, I was like, Ben Brown's involved in this too? How'd they know? But different Ben Brown. He's the one who, like, killed his wife by accident.
Yeah, did the plastic surgery on the wife, and the wife died. Yeah.
So another doctor named Ben Brown. That was bad. A murder. But this different Ben Brown, who used to live next to Gerhardt for several years until the doctor relocated to Maui in pursuit of his alleged dream job, described the family as friendly and said they were good neighbors. District Judge Christine Yu confirmed bail for Gerhardt at $5 million. Ariel has since petitioned for a restraining order against him, where she gave more information about the incident. She said that Gerhardt, so this is from that, she said that Gerhardt grabbed her arms and pushed her back, yelling that he was sick of her. She wrote, "At first I thought he was joking, but I quickly realized he was seriously trying to make me fall off the cliff. I was screaming and pleading with him to stop, asking him to think about our children. If I'd fallen off the cliff, I would have likely died." Ariel also revealed that in December 2024, Gerhardt accused her of having an affair, leading to extreme jealousy. She wrote, since then, he has attempted to control and monitor all of my communications. Ariel said that she and Gerhardt went to couples therapy and he suggested a weekend away for her birthday. So the day of the attack was actually on Ariel's birthday. It was during this vacation that Gerhardt suggested that they take a hike at the lookout. Ariel said, during the hike, I became uneasy and informed Gerhardt that I did not want to continue. Ariel has said she became dizzy, standing near the cliff edge, and asked Gerhardt to move so that she could move away. She said that Gerhardt then yelled, get back over here. I'm so expletive sick of you. She also mentioned the syringes that he had. She said, I don't know what was in the syringe, but Gerhardt is an anesthesiologist and has access to several potentially lethal medications as part of his employment. Ariel said that she grabbed the syringe and threw it as he combed through his bag for what she thought was another syringe, and that she also bit his forearm. Ariel wrote in her petition that if Gerhardt was released, she believed that he would harm or kill her, their children, and their dog. She wrote that she keeps a gun in a home safe and fears that he might try to access it. She also indicated that Gerhardt has abused and assaulted her over the past few months. After the attack, Gerhardt video called his adult child and said, I just tried to kill Ari, but she got away. That's according to the court documents. Gerhardt appeared to be covered in blood during the video call. And court records also show that he is scheduled to be arraigned to enter his plea later this month. And that is everything up to date.
I have just so many questions. I was hoping that what was in the syringes would have come out by now. As of the time of recording, it hasn't, but I wonder if the syringes weren't able to be found because she said she threw one and then he was on the run for X amount of hours, so he could have disposed of the other syringe if there was a second one.
So I might never know.
Yeah, in case anyone is wondering, we don't know. It hasn't been said yet. Maybe it'll come out in court what was in the syringes. But as of this point, we don't know. It seems to me like he probably planned this. Like, I know the whole yelling at her and saying, I'm sick of you, get back here, maybe just indicates a rage. But I feel like he probably planned to take her there and was going to try and make her death look like an accident. But then it was just so sloppy. This is what I don't get for someone who's probably a smart man, highly educated. Surely if he was really trying to carry out this plan, he could have had some more foresight and planned it better. He planned it sloppily, horribly. It was never, ever, ever going to work. Like, I've been to Hawaii. There are many remote places you could go to and probably make it look like an accident. Why go to a super popular lookout where there's two buses going there? In the middle of the day, the whole thing was ridiculous.
I wonder if it wasn't so much that he planned it, maybe didn't have this specific plan, but I bet that there's been times in the past where he was like so angry because it seems like the abuse had been going on for a bit and he has these anger issues where he was like, I'm going to be prepared to kill her.
Yeah.
And I might kill her. So maybe that's why he like had this stuff at the ready. So when the opportunity arose and there was an argument and he was in a situation where he felt he could maybe frame it as an accident of some sort, then he would whip the stuff out. Part of me also thinks maybe it was some sort of like sedative in the syringe. Did he plan to inject her with that and just push? Maybe he thought she'd go more quietly, wouldn't catch on. He'd be able to just kind of push her off the cliff and be like, oh, she fell. Oh no. Like that's why he's trying to get her to take the picture.
A few comments from people saying it reminds them a little bit of the Don't Move movie. I don't know if you guys have seen that, but basically it's where the same thing happens. This guy injects people with like a paralytic drug where they can't move. They're awake, but they literally can't move. So,
which is very like anesthesiologist also.
Yeah. So I would love to know what was in these syringes. Hopefully we'll find out. I have read some reports that Ariel has said that over the past few months, Gerhardt was sexually abusing her as well. It sounds like there was a lot of control issues in their marriage on his behalf. He was jealous, thought she was, you know, accused her of having an affair for whatever reason. There's been a lot of media reports about their property in Maui and they say like it's worth $1.5 million, which I don't know. I don't feel like that's especially excessive these days, but, you know, maybe there was some financial motive for him to want her dead in terms of not wanting to split the assets if it was going to be a divorce or whatever. There could be something along those lines as well. But he just does seem like a rageful, controlling person.
I do think, actually, now that I was talking about it, I bet he did plan it for that spot, but he just didn't think, because one, his massive ego, that she would put up a fight and catch on to him, and thought that she would just go more quietly because he is the superior being. And of course, he would be able to pull one over on her and inject her with a syringe and then push her off the cliff easily.
And even the bit about it being on her birthday was kind of like a final fuck you, I think. Like, look what I can do on you, you know, a day that's meant to be happy for you. I can take your life and ruin it. Like, I feel like it was all planned, but he just maybe was even so arrogant that he just thought he could get away with being sloppy and not really, you know, planning every detail. And he clearly didn't.
Yeah, so it seems like another situation where a woman is underestimated, but good for her for putting up a fight, and now look at him.
It's interesting too, in these, just like when I read the online comments about cases like this, I saw a lot of comments almost victim blaming or victim shaming Ariel. Like one comment I read, and I'm paraphrasing, but it was basically like, and you know what she's going to do? She's going to go straight back to him. And I'm like, wow, you don't even know anything about the dynamics of the relationship. And then now she's got this restraining order, and she, like, it seems like she wants to keep him away. It's interesting that people just assume they know what is going to happen, you know, based on, they're like there were people questioning these comments, but there's always a victim blaming or shaming comment in something like this.
Well, especially with domestic violence, I feel like so many people don't understand it, especially people who haven't lived through it or don't, like, know someone that lived through it or have, like, seen what it's really like. They'll probably be like, well, if he was abusing her for months, like, why are they going on this Hawaiian vacation? Why didn't she leave at the first sign of abuse and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
It's like, shut up. Like, read a book.
Yeah. So anyway, he hasn't made bail as far as I've seen. He's still in custody. So he'll be in court later on this month. So we'll be able to give you some updates.
Yeah. Throw the book at him. Fuck him.
I hope so. Yeah. What a loser.
Loser.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
All right, so the second case we are going to discuss is one I actually hadn't heard about until I started.
It's pretty crazy
looking for anesthesiologist crimes. And I feel like had you heard about it? I feel like it should have been maybe bigger news, especially based on the sentence that was given. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but it is actually a crazy, wild case that I feel like probably flew under the radar a little bit. But
I feel like maybe because it's like so much medical stuff that sometimes the news is too, like, hard. Well, we can't get into this. We can't cover this and say all these big words and craziness, but it is really crazy.
So it's about Texas anesthesiologist named Reynaldo Rivera Ortiz Jr. So Reynaldo has been dubbed a medical terrorist after he was found guilty of putting dangerous drugs in the IV bags of his patients. This led to the death of a co-worker, which is kind of strange, but we'll get into why, as well as multiple health emergencies in the facility where he worked.
I want to begin with some breaking news for you. A North Texas doctor has been arrested in the federal investigation into tainted IV bags. We're told Dr. Reynaldo Ortiz was taken into custody in Plano earlier today and is now being booked into the Dallas County Jail at this hour. He worked at the Baylor Scott & White Surgicare location in North Dallas. And that's where we find I-Team reporter Ginger Allen live for us now with this update. Ginger.
The board says there is surveillance video of Dr. Ortiz handling IV bags shortly before patients would suffer serious cardiac issues. According to the board, a test of an IV bag from a recent patient showed tiny holes in the plastic wrap and traces of bupivacaine, a drug that could be fatal when administered through an IV. It's the same drug that reportedly killed Dr. Ortiz's colleague, another anesthesiologist. The board says she took an IV bag home to rehydrate and had a heart attack right after putting in the IV. When we spoke to Dr. Ortiz last Friday, he denied all the accusations, saying he'd only ever put antibiotics in an IV bag. Earlier today, I sat down with attorney Bruce Steckler, who was representing six patients who believe they were victims of tainted IV bags. He says all of his clients were healthy and undergoing routine procedures when they suffered serious heart problems. Steckler says he's working with the hospital now to get to the bottom of this and find out who all is involved.
So as some background into Ronaldo, he obtained his Texas medical license in 1991. So this has all just happened in the last few years. He'd been practicing for decades. In 1995, he was arrested for assaulting his wife. The couple would later get divorced, but this wasn't the only incident in which he was allegedly abusive towards women. Around 2005, another woman filed for an emergency protective order against him. And in 2014, he was arrested for assaulting a third woman. That woman also filed for an emergency protective order. Reynaldo's neighbor, Roxanne, witnessed the third assault, and she ended up testifying against him during the protective order hearing in court. So he clearly didn't like this because months after, he shot Roxanne's dog with a pellet gun. He was charged with a Class A misdemeanor, which the Texas Medical Board referred to as a crime of moral turpitude, and he was fined $4,000. He was ordered to pay the dog's vet bills, and he was given 2 years of community service. Months later, he received a public reprimand and a $2,000 fine from the Texas Medical Board for failing to notify all hospitals of the charge. One board record referred to Reynaldo's history of violence against women. Despite the arrests, he was allowed to continue practicing after a 14-day suspension. So all these red flags.
Yeah, so I was just going to say, the list like goes on and on and continues on and on and on. And you're like, how did this guy have a job still?
It reminds me of the episode we did about the nurses and the one nurse who had so many investigations and reprimands and was still allowed to continue and ended up murdering multiple people.
And it's crazy because as a patient, you don't even know this half the time.
No. So Reynaldo started his own business called Garland Anesthesia Consultants. That business contracted out anesthesiologists, including himself, to healthcare facilities, which I feel like is the same kind of employment scenario that Gerhardt had. Basically, you say I'm an anesthesiologist and they say, okay, well, this hospital needs you to work there. And
they're like contracted by the hospital.
Yeah. So by 2017, it was estimated that that company was making up to $9 million in revenue annually. Reynaldo purchased a Corvette, a Lexus, and three Mercedes. He also bought a mansion in Dallas, which was valued at $1.3 million back then. So he seemed to be doing pretty well. He was known to have a fiery temper. He apparently became irate during the pandemic when he was made to wear a mask, which as a doctor is wild. But anyway, he shouted in the face of a coworker about this and security had to be called. Coworkers also said that Reynaldo could be rough with patients while they were intubated. In 2020, Reynaldo was working at a Baylor Scott & White Surgicare facility in Garland in Texas. In November that year, a patient was apparently having difficulty breathing, and Reynaldo, even though his anesthesiologist did not notice. After this, he stopped working at the Garland location and worked for other facilities. After this incident, he had to be monitored by another physician. That physician reviewed at least 30 of his patient records and prepared written reports documenting any perceived deficiencies. He also had to complete medical training and pay a $3,000 penalty. Again, more red flags that just slipped by. Mm-hmm. The Texas Medical Board did not revoke his license, and they said it was because he had rehabilitative potential and present value to the community.
Oh, of course.
So that incident happened at a Baylor Scott & White Surgicare facility in Texas, but in 2022, he was working at another of those facilities. This one was in Dallas. There's a really, really, really comprehensive article about this case from Men's Health, which is kind of a surprising source, but it was very interesting. I've linked it on the blog if you want to read it. This is directly from that article. It says, the North Dallas Surgicare Center occupies a handsome modernist building near the North Central Expressway. It's partly owned by physicians, which means that trained medical professionals rather than bureaucrats decide how it operates. The rest belongs to Baylor Scott & White, which is a healthcare conglomerate that manages 48 hospitals and more than 900 patient care sites in Texas. It employs 7,300 doctors and 49,000 healthcare workers, making it the largest not-for-profit healthcare entity there and one of the biggest in the country. Then it goes on to say, mistakes happen at the center. Mistakes happen at hospitals everywhere because medicine is not an exact science. Unexpected events occur, especially at large hospitals, given the sheer number of procedures that are done there. But what has taken place at the North Dallas Surgery Center was frighteningly abnormal. At least 11 unexplained emergencies occurred with patients in the summer of 2022. In August alone, the center had the same number of transfers, which is when problems require moving a patient to an emergency medical facility, as in the number it had recorded in all of 2021. So in 1 month, it had the same amount of emergencies as it had had whole entire year prior. The article said it was if some awful curse had befallen it. So between May and August 2022, numerous patients at this facility suffered cardiac emergencies during what should have been routine medical procedures. In June 2022, Dr. Melanie Casper, who was 55 at the time, began to feel unwell. Melanie worked at the center as an anesthesiologist. The article says that she kind of tried to work through it, but one day she took an IV bag home and wanted to rehydrate herself. Her husband, John, helped her to set up the IV. She sat there. She thought, you know, this was going to rehydrate her, make her feel better. A few minutes later, John got a call from Melanie and she was screaming into the phone. When he got back to her, John asked if the IV bag was the thing causing her pain, and she said, no, it's my arm and my chest. John called 911. Melanie collapsed. She spoke incoherently for a few seconds and then went silent. John began CPR, but by the time paramedics had arrived, Melanie's heart had stopped and she had passed away.
So crazy. That's like such a freaking crazy story. Like, she just took a bag from a hospital, which you think you could trust at your job, to rehydrate herself.
And someone who's clearly very experienced, I'm assuming had been doing this job for decades, a basic routine IV for hydration. And then for this to happen.
Yeah, and clearly the bag was friggin' tampered with. Like,
yeah.
So sad.
So I guess, understandably, Melanie's death was originally thought to be a heart attack, especially if she's saying it's my arm and my chest. You know, they always say that left arm pain can indicate a heart attack. After an autopsy was conducted, high levels of bupivacaine, which is a nerve block medication commonly used for local anesthesia and pain management, was found in her bloodstream. They determined that her cause of death was actually a fatal dose of the drug, although they didn't know how she'd received it. So she died in June 2022. On August 2022, an 18-year-old named Jack checked into the North Dallas SurgCare Center. He'd come in to have an injury repaired, which was a deviated septum. It's a very common procedure. While he was under anesthesia, his blood pressure soared to 200 over 150, which is a dangerously high figure. Fluid filled his lungs, and then his heart stopped.
Jack Adlerstein told us how trying out his friend's dirt bike ended poorly with a minor injury to his nose.
After that, my nose was very crooked. I didn't really care so much about it. My mom really cared. I still couldn't breathe out of one nostril, but I don't know. It's not as bad as it seems.
Adlerstein, 18 years old at the time, decided to follow his mom's advice and went in for surgery at the Baylor Scott & White SurgiCare in North Dallas, August 24th, 2022. What he and his dad, Dovi Adlerstein, did not know is the day before Jack's surgery, Dr. Reynaldo Ortiz, an anesthesiologist they did not know, was later caught on camera secretly filling up large syringes of different types of drugs and putting them in his pocket.
I thought you could just end the case then.
That was almost certainly the syringe that went in the bag that ended up in your arm.
Jack's simple procedure suddenly took a turn. His surgeon and anesthesiologist testified they frantically tried to figure out why his heart rate skyrocketed to 250 over 150, numbers his doctor testified he'd never seen before. He also had fluid in his lungs, and at one point, doctors could no longer feel his pulse. Turns out another doctor, Chad Marsden, had something similar happen to his patient days earlier. He came by the SurgiCare to look at records when he saw the commotion with Jack.
The providence that was involved in his showing up at the time that he did and being able to go over to Dr. Hussein and say, I think it's the bag, change the bag, is probably what saved Jack's life.
There's not really like words to think someone really saved your life.
But even after Jack's condition stabilized, his recovery from the ordeal took time.
The next 24 hours were really, really hard for me.
And then there was this moment.
They gave me a cup of water and I was holding the cup of water. And then they took it away and I wasn't able to move my hand for like hours. I was like really like frozen.
We were told that there was a real fear that there might be lasting neurological damage.
Thankfully, Jack fully recovered. Dovi Adlerstein says it's unclear what could have happened without Dr. Marsden.
He's the reason we have this guy around, and most days we're rather fond of him. So we're forever, and is that, that's, all of his doctors, really.
The same day that Jack was in the hospital, a doctor called Dr. Chad Marsden started to look over patient files to try and find a connection between all of these kind of unexplained emergency events. Dr. Marsden recounted that Jack's IV bag had been swapped out minutes before his blood pressure spiked, and he kind of had an aha moment and said, I think there's a problem with the IV bags. Jack's bag was swapped for a fresh one, and he was thankfully stabilized. Jack was transferred to the ICU. Hours later, he awoke without the ability to speak or move, and doctors were really worried that he would have lasting neurological damage. During all of this, Ashley Burks, who was the facility administrator, called the surgery center's governing chair and said, "It's happening again." Dr. Marsden inspected the IV bag that had been used for Jack's surgery, and he noticed a tiny puncture hole. The bag was tested and found to contain bupivacaine, which was the same drug that killed Melanie. Lidocaine and epinephrine were also found. This media release about the incident is from the US Attorney's Office. It says a local lab analyzed fluid from the bag used during the teenager's surgery, and then it lists all the drugs that were found. It says a drug cocktail that could have caused the boy's symptoms, which included very high blood pressure, cardiac dysfunction, and pulmonary edema. The lab also observed a puncture in the bag. So it became very evident at that point that someone who was likely working in the hospital was tampering with the bags.
How scary to like come to that realization. Like everyone at the hospital is probably like, what the hell?
And even like a puncture mark of a needle would be so, so tiny. Imagine so lucky to have actually, like I know in the end they probably would have figured it out, but for the doctor to have observed the puncture mark was very lucky.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
What if I told you that right now, millions of people are living with a debilitating condition that's so misunderstood, many of them don't even know that they have it? That condition is obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. I'm Dr. Patrick McGrath, the Chief Clinical Officer of NOCD. And in the 25 years I've been treating OCD, I've met so many people who were suffering from the condition in silence, unaware of just what it was. OCD can create overwhelming anxiety and fear around what you value most, make you question your identity, beliefs, and morals, and drive you to perform mentally and physically draining compulsions or rituals. Over my career, I've seen just how devastating OCD can be when it's left untreated. But help is available. That's where NOCD comes in. NOCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for obsessive compulsive disorder. Our licensed therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention therapy, a specialized treatment proven to be incredibly effective for OCD. So visit NOCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call with our team. That's NOCD.com.
So an investigation was undertaken. The FDA became involved on September 9th. So the incidents that we just mentioned happened in June and August. On September 9th, 2022, Reynaldo's license was suspended. He didn't know about this until a local reporter called him. Reynaldo told the reporter, "I'm just devastated. I didn't do it, madam." And he insisted that the only thing he would ever add to an IV bag was antibiotics. When the reporter asked if he was concerned about the patients who had suffered emergencies, he said, "Am I concerned? I didn't do anything." He was charged by criminal complaint in September 2022. He was indicted in October 2022 on charges of tampering with consumer product causing death and intentional drug adulteration. There is actually CCTV footage of Reynaldo getting the IV bags from the warming bin and replacing them soon after. After the bags were put back, they were taken into operating rooms where patients then experienced emergencies. So there's some photos of him. He's all kind of masked and gloved up and he's, you know, tampering with the bags.
Looking suspish.
Yep. There's a quote and it says, "Video also showed him mixing vials of medication and watching as victims were wheeled out by emergency responders." So he kind of hung around to see the aftermath of what he'd done.
So sick.
In April 2024, Reynaldo went to trial. Some sources say it went for 8 days, some say 9. Either way, it was just over a week. Prosecutors found that despite his seemingly affluent lifestyle, he was in a lot of debt. He'd been assigned a public defender as he was unable to afford his own attorney, and by that point he owed several million dollars to the IRS.
Damn.
Evidence at the trial showed that he was facing disciplinary action for an alleged medical mistake that he had made in one of his own surgeries and that he potentially faced finally losing his medical license. It was also noted that, quote, at trial, doctors testified about the confusion they felt when their patients' blood pressures suddenly skyrocketed. The media release said, reviewing medical records, they all noted the emergencies occurred shortly after new IV bags had been hung. Patients recalled waking up unexpectedly intubated in intensive care units that they had been transported to via emergency medical transportation services in pain and in fear for their lives. So I can't even imagine just going in for some basic routine surgery. Like, obviously, I know there's a risk with any anesthesia, but something that it's very unlikely to go wrong, and then waking up in intensive care intubated, it would be horrifying.
Totally.
The U.S. attorney for the Northern District of Texas said Dr. Ortiz cloaked himself in the white coat of a healer, but instead of curing pain, he inflicted it. They went on to say he assembled ticking time bombs, then sat in wait as those medical time bombs went off one by one, toxic cocktails flowing into the veins of patients who were often at their most vulnerable, lying unconscious on the operating table. We saw the patients testify. Their pain, their fear, and the trauma was palpable in that courtroom. So Reynaldo was convicted on 10 charges at the end of the trial, 4 counts of tampering with consumer products resulting in serious bodily injury, 1 count of tampering with a consumer product, and 5 counts of an intentional adulteration of a drug. For unknown reasons, he wasn't charged with anything in relation to Melanie's death, which I'm kind of interested in why. I can't really find the reasoning why. I wonder if it's because she took the IV bag home and it was
I also don't get why...
I don't know.
Mish wasn't supposed to, technically. Yeah. But I don't get why he was on charge with, like, murder or attempted murder. Like, clearly that was the intent.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
So Melanie's husband, John, spoke after the proceedings. He said, "There's no closure. My best friend is gone." He goes, "I'll have regrets forever for not yanking the IV bag out of her arm." One juror also spoke to the media after the trial and said, "It kind of makes you question if you even want to go to the doctor yourself."
That's what I was thinking too.
Yeah. In November 2024, Reynaldo was sentenced to 190 years in prison, which I think is, don't get me wrong, I think it's a great term, but I also feel like they absolutely made an example out of him, which rightly so, but that is a wild long term, rightfully deserved.
Especially since they didn't actually charge him with, like, murder, but I just feel like they should have done it because it would have just made people feel better because... that's what it was.
And I also, like, it's not the same crime at all, but I also feel like it's kind of like what they're doing with Luigi Mangione, trying to go for the death penalty just to put a message out there saying this is not on, we will not tolerate this.
Yeah.
So investigators in the case released statements after his sentencing. The principal deputy assistant attorney, Brian Boynton, said the defendant betrayed the trust of patients by tampering with critical medical supplies and the result was serious bodily injury. Today's sentence reflects the seriousness of these offences and should make clear that the department will work tirelessly to investigate and prosecute anyone who endangers patients by tampering with drugs. The US attorney Leah Simonton said the disgraced doctor acted no better than an armed assailant spraying bullets indiscriminately into a crowd. The doctor tampered with random IV bags, apparently unconcerned with who he hurt, but he wielded an invisible weapon, a cocktail of heart-stopping drugs concealed inside an IV bag designed to help patients heal. On at least 9 separate occasions, he essentially attacked unconscious patients lying on an operating table, and he even killed a colleague. I'm so proud of our officers' work in bringing him to justice and bringing a measure of solace to his families, to his victims and their families. The FDA also issued a statement. They said patients expect that their doctors will use only safe and effective medical products during surgeries. The illicit tampering in this case demonstrated a gross disregard for patient safety. This investigation uncovered that adulterating the IV bags caused serious adverse health consequences. This sentencing is a clear demonstration that the FDA will not stop pursuing and bringing to justice those who risk patients' health and safety through their criminal actions. So obviously, rightfully so, they all came down very, very hard on him. I guess it would have been such a dangerous precedent to set if he kind of had have gotten off with a slap on the wrist or, you know, a lighter sentence. It's so dangerous. It has the ability to, like, I know with when some, like, murder is horrible anyway, but this guy had the actual ability to murder so many people, and it was just lucky that
they're lucky that they caught him so fast too. Like, it was still relatively quick, because if they didn't catch on, he could have harmed so many more people, because sometimes stuff like this, like medical crimes, it's hard to catch on to. It's hard to figure out. But luckily he wasn't the smartest, which I think, again, he was just a person with too big of an ego, thought he was smarter than everyone else, that they would never figure out it was him, that he was just some genius who wanted to watch the world burn, so he thought. But really, he got caught pretty quickly, so.
I feel like, too, he kind of probably knew his gig was almost up. He knew he was probably going to lose his license. It sounds like this is just my speculation.
Yeah, after all the other.
It sounds like he was bitter, and this was kind of like a final fuck you to everyone. Look what I can do.
Yeah, totally.
You guys think that you're so powerful, you can take away my medical license and my professional career, but look what I can do.
So he just decided to be a nuisance.
Yeah. So there is a term for this type of crime. It's called clinicide. It's not a brand new term, but a newish term that was coined in 2007 by a forensic psychiatrist in Sydney, Australia, and it refers to doctors who intentionally cause a patient's death during treatment. The British Medical Journal said in 2020, this is a quote, "Arguably, medicine has thrown up more serial killers than all other professions put together." So we have done some other episodes on, you know, the nurses who have murdered, but I guess just having access to that many people regularly with that amount of dangerous medication and kind of ways that people can die, it's absolutely understandable why that could be believed.
Well, it's also because most surgeries, medical procedures, like reasons for you being in a hospital, they all come with a certain level of risk. There's always risks when you have a surgery, even if it's run-of-the-mill, everyday surgery, there's always the risk that something bad can happen and that you can die or get more injured than you would have thought. So that's why a lot of times it's easy for medical professionals to explain away. And I feel like that's why, like, Lucy Letby was able to get away with it for so long.
I was just
thinking
we hadn't even spoken about her. And the thing with Lucy Letby too, so she was a nurse, if you're not familiar with her case, where she's been convicted of murdering multiple babies. But, like, a lot of her patients were very vulnerable. Like, they were premature babies who had health issues. So kind of their deaths would be more explainable than just, say, someone who went in for a deviated septum surgery would have been in this case.
Yeah, so it almost seems like he didn't even want to try to hide it that bad. Like, he was just, like you said, being
arrogant,
a miserable trash person, angry at the world.
He must have known there was CCTV. Like, there's CCTV, I'm assuming, in, like, most common areas of hospitals and most, you know, it's just wild that he thought he could get away with it. But maybe he just didn't even care. He knew he wasn't going to, and he just wanted to see how long he could get away with it for before he was found.
Yeah. I mean, he's, like, standing right in front of the camera in the video.
Yeah.
But it's just sad because it does create, like, a mistrust in doctors, and there's already so much propaganda and mistrust about healthcare. Well, granted, there's a lot of problems in healthcare, but I do think most doctors and nurses and people who get into the field do it because they genuinely want to help people and help save lives. So it sucks to have people like this guy creating these suspicions and villainizing doctors and nurses who actually do care and do want to help people.
And I feel like, too, like, I think it's the same there as it is here. People are screaming for doctors and nurses, and that's part of the reason why Ronaldo was still allowed to practice, because they're like, you know, he's valued to the community, whereas it shouldn't have to be like that. You know, it should be, obviously there's not an easy answer to that, but the fact that they're so desperate for these healthcare professionals that they're willing to
take trash off the streets.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, and that all just, it's like the vicious cycle, because they're also overworked, short-staffed. A lot of the healthcare system treats the doctors and nurses like trash, garbage, and the whole thing has become like a business instead of it really being about caring for people and wanting to help people, because it's just turned into this big, like, corporate thing now where they're rushing doctors and nurses to, like, see this many patients in an hour, and they're all getting burnt out, and they're like, honestly, I don't want to do this anymore. And then that's how you end up with people like this working in hospitals.
Yeah.
Sad.
Very. It's, yeah, I just feel like it's just unbelievably lucky in this case that there wasn't more people who ended up losing their lives. Obviously, the co-worker is very sad, but the fact that he didn't manage to kill more patients is almost miraculous.
Yeah, and that's the only silver lining we can take out of this, because very sad, grim story. So to end on a sad note, like, just to end on a non-optimistic note at all. So that's really it for the story and this episode. Would love to know what you guys think about it. What do you think of these cases? If you've heard of any other like similar stories, maybe we could do more episodes like this coming up. But yeah, let us know what you guys think, your thoughts, opinions, all that. Everything will be on the blog at truecrimesocietyblog.com as always. Make sure you're following us on Instagram at True Crime Society because that's where we're always posting the latest updates and things like that. If you want to know what we're up to, my personal account is stephsum_olivia's TCS Olivia. And of course, check us out on Patreon. We do have a Patreon account. We do weekly bonus episodes and we do all these episodes ad-free. So essentially being two episodes a week without ads, which is awesome. We do earlier release on the regular main episodes too. And Patreon has some fun chat features. We have a little book club going on, talking about books and all that. So check us out over there if you are interested in any of that. And otherwise, all the usual stuff. Leave us some Spotify comments, nice reviews, share the podcast with your friends, to your Instagram story. It's a big help to us. And make sure you're still subscribed or following on whatever platform you listen on, especially Apple, because Apple deletes us from your subscription. So just go double check.
Yeah.
But that's it for this episode. Thank you guys for listening. My throat is killing me. Oh my God. Stay safe out there, everyone. Peace out.
See ya.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.